Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and it's time for our roundtable discussion about Wisconsin wildlife and nature. And we have our regular guests back. Pat Durkin, one of them. Pat's a freelance writer, editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. It's always fun to be here.
Dean Bortz is one of our other guests as well. Dean is editor of the Wisconsin Outdoor News. And Dean, great to see your sort of smiling face. Okay, now it's a smiling face.
I just put a smile on for you, Larry. Good to be back. Glad for the invite. Thanks for the invite. Appreciate it.
Oh, man. Tim Isley, a freelance outdoor writer and private landowner in Crawford County. Tim was one of the original founding members of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. That was back in 1976. Tim, good to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Really appreciate the invitation and happy to be here and always fun to talk with you. Thank you.
Well, we want to hear, as you listen to these three very experienced outdoors people and writers, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. I want to hear about your favorite, maybe your favorite wildlife book of the year or any wildlife issue at the top of your mind. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Well, fall in Wisconsin offers plenty of hunting, hiking, sightseeing opportunities. And I want to know how you guys are spending the season. And I think I'm going to turn first to Tim Isley, because Tim's sitting on an island, if I'm not mistaken, right now as we speak.
Well, you're right, Larry. I'm out on the Mississippi River. My youngest brother and I are duck hunting. And basically, we're in the middle of the Mississippi River on an island. And it's foggy here today. You know, between Wisconsin and in Minnesota, we're south of La Crosse, north of Genoa. And it's wonderful to be out here. The Mississippi is so fascinating and so scenic. And the interesting thing, you know, is to realize that here we are surrounded by water. And, you know, the locks and dams went in the 1930s. Before that, this was farmland and marshland. And so what a change. But now we've got this wonderful river here and a lot of water and marsh. And it's wonderful to be here. Wonderful to be out in the middle of it.
Well, thanks for taking a little time out of the duck hunting to talk with us. Dean Bortz, what about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Well, I guess the first thing I want to find out is if Tim shot anything this morning.
No, nothing.
and then I have to ask him, do you have the Mike Isley with you on that island?
Yes, the Mike Isley is off about 20 yards to my left, Dean. Yeah.
How do you keep that guy quiet enough to harvest anything when you're hunting?
He's pretty good.
Okay, I've been bouncing between Wisconsin and Montana this fall, ever since about the middle of September. Between bow hunting elk in Montana, bow hunting deer in September in Montana. My grandson Mason came out to visit me out here for a couple of days. He caught up with me out here and we got him his first pheasants. He bow hunted deer with me out here. He almost got a shot by stalking in on a buck bedded down in a canyon. I went home for a couple of weeks and mostly tried to blow leaves during all that snow that was on the ground. That didn't work very well, but I did get in a little bit of bow hunting for deer there. Nothing happened there. And right now I'm back in Montana trying to fill my rifle deer and elk tag before going back home prior to the gun deer opener in Wisconsin.
You get a busy guy running back and forth there. Well, it sounds like you got a big smile on your face, so it sounds like you're having a good time. Pat, what about you?
I felt like I was kind of retired this past week, but I'm not retired. But I started last week off spending 2 days down in Vernon County, Crawford County area with some old grade school and high school buddies to bow hunt for 2 days. And all we did was basically sit through snowstorms and cold rain. I never saw a deer in those 2 days, but then one of my buddies, Kurt Walke, shot one. I think on Friday last week. So they were there. And then I got home Tuesday or Wednesday morning, and right away Wednesday afternoon, I went fishing with a local guy up here, Joel Swanson, and I caught a walleye almost within, I'd say, 2 minutes of starting. So we thought we were going to be in a hot streak that day. And then that ended up being the only walleye we got in the boat that we could keep. And then I came down to southern Wisconsin back to the Middleton area. And on Saturday morning, I took one of my grandsons fishing at Devil's Lake State Park, thinking we may maybe catch some trout coming in closer to shore in the fall. But it was a cold morning, and I'll use that as an excuse. It was a cold, windy morning, and he caught one nice largemouth, and I broke his fishing rod, so it was a memorable day.
Oh, you broke the rod. Well, I can remember going up with my brother on a muskie fishing trip, and I had two brand-new custom-made muskie rods, and we had to stop, and my brother opened the trunk, and in fooling around when he shut the trunk, he broke the ends off of both of my brand-new custom-made muskie rods. Not the way you want to have start a trip, that's for sure. Meredith in Madison has something that relates to Pat, I think. So let's go there. Meredith, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say hi to Pat Durkin. Pat, it's Meredith Peterson calling. Saying, hey, how are you?
Hello, Meredith. Great to hear from you.
Just wanted to thank you again for the amazing article that you wrote years ago called The Captain's Gone But Not Forgotten.
Oh.
Well, thank you, Meredith. That was Meredith, the daughter of my late friend John Peterson, who John and I both served in the Navy, and John served for 30 years. He was a high-ranking officer, unlike me. I was just an enlisted man. But, it was one of my closest friends. We were only friends for like 5 or 6 years because he died on me in 2009. But I got to meet a great family though, and it's been fun to kind of stay in touch with them in recent years.
Those stories, just to go a little further, stories like that, I bet all three of you have written stories like that, sort of along those lines. Is that a kind of a good story for you to write? You get a lot of, I don't know, it's enjoyment, might be bittersweet, but do you get a lot of enjoyment out of a piece like that?
Yeah, for me, Larry, I've always felt like that might be one of my strongest suits as a writer, that I like to think I'm an empathetic person who appreciates those human connections. And I used to write obituaries fairly regularly for the Oshkosh newspaper. And eventually the editors there, when someone important in town would die, they would often come over to my desk and say, stop what you're doing and work on this instead. So I've taken pride in that over the years. It's just something that, in this case of writing about John Peterson, that time when he died, it was, I found it was a tough thing to write, especially so soon after he died. But what's important, I think, as a writer is to do that kind of writing while you're still hurting, while still raw, and still not be so maudlin that you make your readers uncomfortable. It's a fine line to walk sometimes.
Yeah. Dean, you're nodding in agreement on that.
Yeah. It's. I was just, as Pat was talking, I was thinking about the column I wrote after my next youngest brother passed away now 20 years ago from lung cancer. He died way, way too early. And boy, I was a tough one to write. But like Pat said, it's best to do it when the emotions are still raw and the memories seem to jump out at you a little bit stronger and maybe a little more color than what they might have actually occurred in. But I was a tough one to write, but when I it was probably one of the better ones, I think. And I'm sure all of us have more than one of them. I'm thinking about an old irascible state trooper by the name of Don Engel out of Minocqua, who, probably would have written his mother a ticket, but, I got to know him over the years and, he's probably was better with horses and hounds than he was with people. But for some reason, he took to my youngest son And those two were, oh, I was going to say one head and one something else, but I probably can't say it on the radio. But, you know, Daniel started going out with Don at age 9 in the summer, during the bear season, mm-hmm. the bull training season. And he spent many days every summer with Don from age 9 through 16. And he's now my son is one of the best woodsmen I know, and I know where it came from.
Yeah.
But writing an obituary or writing a column about Don after he passed away wasn't easy because, you know, a lot of people didn't like him, although he was a likable guy once you got to know him. So, yeah, that's been tough.
Not easy.
Not rewarding, but there's a little bit of some sort of satisfaction. I think maybe just because you get to write about somebody you know and love and you know, you got to learn from them, I think, you know. So,
well, we have some other callers online with a different kind of question from the one I just asked. Robert in Mineral Point has a question or a comment. Let's go there. Robert, hi.
Yeah, how you doing, Larry? It's good to be on with you today.
Well, thanks for joining in. What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk to your buddy from Montana about the walleye fishing. You know, it's really, really good on the Mississippi right now, kind of towards up Prairie du Chien and Lynxville. If you get up there by the dam, you want to catch some keepers. I go out probably once or twice a week now late in the season just before it kind of gets real cold. When that water hits below 50 degrees, that's when the walleye really start coming up. So if you want to get some of them good northern fish before you go back to Montana, get up there by that lock and dam number 9 up in Prairie du Chien. Catch you some good keepers.
Well, I'll take that under extreme advisement. But the person who could probably do that right now, you know, in fact, I wonder if Tim has a shotgun in one hand and a fishing rod in the other, because he's probably not too far from where this gentleman caller was just talking about. He's sitting right in the middle of me.
Yeah, you're right, and the fishing has been very good. No, we're hunting right now. We're sort of specializing in that, but the walleye fishing and the perch fishing, I know some friends had had been out fishing just the other day, and they were having perch for dinner last night. So, it's a wonderful resource, and this is a good time to be out here. You're right.
Well, Tim mentioned perch, and Pat, you have an update about the yellow perch population in the Mississippi and surrounding territories, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, about, I'm guessing it's probably been close to a year or so now, maybe more. Dean can correct me, but I wrote a piece for Outdoor News a while back about just how phenomenal the yellow perch have come on along the Mississippi River and also up into the Eau Claire area and the Chippewa River. And it's a lot of it's just because we've done a good job in our society of cleaning up our waterways. I think also the zebra mussel actually factors in a little bit too with filtering the water. But I know I moved to Eau Claire about, it'll be coming up on full 3 years now. And I have to say, one of the greatest things I like about living here is I have good access to good perch fishing all around me right now. And you can pretty much take that from all the way from Eau Claire down into the Mississippi River and all the way down into where on the Mississippi leaves Wisconsin. There's good perch fishing quite often basically year round between ice fishing and open water fishing.
Well, that's good. And I like perch. I love to eat perch. There's no doubt about that. Well, we got Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, and Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer and private landowner in Crawford County. Our outdoor writers and outdoor communicators with us today. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. You could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert's our producer, Trina LaSusa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mailer for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here as we look at and talk with our outdoor communicators, the outdoor writers who write about all the natural issues in our state. Dean Bortz, Pat Durkin and Tim Heisley, started to say Dan Small. Dan Small will be on at noon today, and we'll take a look at his new Deer Hunt Wisconsin film that he produces every year, and he's produced another dandy. Wayne in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, I was just wondering, haven't been seeing a whole lot of geese flying this year. Any ideas on why that is?
Goose, I'm trying to think of myself about that, and I haven't seen many flights either. Any comments from maybe Tim, because you're on the duck hunting at least.
You bet, and I can tell you that there are. I mean, we've seen some birds around, but it's interesting because when we're here on the Mississippi in past years, at night, you can hear in the refuges up and down the Upper Mississippi National Fish and Wildlife Refuge, you can hear geese, you know, honking, gaggling, and tundra swans, and it's a cacophony of all these sounds. Right now, we're not hearing that. I think, you know, there's ducks around, but they're resting on the pools. But I don't think that the big concentration of tundra swans and Canada geese, they're just not here. So I'm not sure whether the weather has pushed them down. Maybe it's been so mild that we don't have the birds around. But I don't think the big concentrations, at least around the Mississippi, are here. I'm not seeing big concentrations of them at all.
Oh, interesting. Dean, comment?
So I live almost on the border of Oneida and Vilas County in the Monaco Woodruff area. So I'm a little bit in a different area than Pat and Tim. And I also spend quite a bit of time up in the Bayfield Washburn area. Up there, I can tell you in that those two areas that we've seen geese all summer. So I wouldn't say we have any kind of a shortage in those areas. Now, they might have moved on or moved around, or maybe there's more to come in yet. But if anybody wants to see geese, they could just head up to those two areas. They probably see plenty.
Yeah. Yep. There you go, Wayne. Thank you very much for calling. Suzanne in Madison, your turn. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I just have a fun story about my daughter's new husband. He and she met on Roatan Island in the Caribbean. And they were there 7 years, and he finally got the right to move here, and they got married this summer. He went fishing with my son on Lake Mendota for the first time from shore, and within an hour, he caught 2 regulation-sized northerns.
Wow. His first time out.
It's a first time out, and it was just amazing for him. Great introduction to Wisconsin, and he's fished his whole life in the Caribbean, you know, 39 years there, so somehow that translated to, you know, his knowledge, I think, translated to some degree. And it was just an exciting time in Wisconsin fishing.
Thanks, Suzanne, for calling. And Lake Mendota, I went out with a friend on Lake Mendota once and caught 10 different species of fish in a day fishing out there on that. So was always a wonderful lake for fishing.
And you're right, Larry, it's got a great variety. And the other thing she might be interested in is that the O'Hara Fishing Club had put together a really good pamphlet of shoreline fishing in the Madison Lakes. So if this gentleman was interested, you know, in the other lakes, if he doesn't have a boat, this pamphlet, and I think you can get that probably up at even some of the city county offices. It talks about shoreline fishing of the Madison Lakes, and that's really good for people who don't have a boat.
Yeah, absolutely. Suzanne, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Philip in Trempealeau has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Larry. I was wondering about the communication of questionable safety of fish from the Mississippi River. My wife read something a few years ago, and now she refuses to eat the walleye and the perch and those things that I bring home. So maybe they can clarify where I can find some information that might dispel that idea.
All right. Let's see. Dean, you want to take that?
Sure, I can start with it, but I'm sure the other fellows have ideas too, but you know, the first place to start would be with the DNR website. The agency's always sampling fish from different waters in the state, and then they'll list what levels, maybe levels isn't the right word, but they'll list recommendations on when and, you know, what size, what species are safe to eat. And when I say safe, it's, you know, they're looking at different levels of, I don't want to say contaminations because I don't want people to not eat fish, but, you know, there are places to go to get that information on the DNR website. And then you can read that and look at where you're fishing and then decide what you want to do.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's enough to convince somebody that it's okay to eat the fish.
Yeah. Pat, you wanted to chime in too.
Definitely, Larry. The thing I'll always say about contamination information is our DNR has done a really good job over the years of testing fish from all the different waters, posting advisories, and just kind of keeping people aware of what these different levels are and what the safe limits are. And that's unlike what we typically get when we buy fish in a store. People don't seem to realize that when you buy fish from a store, that fish, the odds of it being having been tested and any real information being available to the consumers just isn't there. I mean, we have stories, and it's not stories. These are actual real life stuff where, like, for instance, the radio shock jock Howard Stern, he got very bad poisoning. I think it was mercury poisoning from eating fish all the time, that he, you know, store-bought fish. And so, you know, everything in moderation. When you buy fish from stores, I'd be more worried about that if you're not aware of the fact that it's commercially caught fish. That stuff is processed fast, and the odds of them ever having real solid information on what kind of contaminations are in that store-bought fish just isn't there. Whereas in our state, with the DNR work that's being done, you can really watch carefully how much you consume and whether you're childbearing age, those kind of factors, that all changes. When you're my age, I'm in my late 60s, I figure you can pretty much eat what you want, and the chances of you getting sick from eating fish, unless you really overdo it, are pretty low. But, you know, it can be done, but people who swear off recreational caught fish just are really doing themselves a disservice, because it doesn't take much information usually to kind of put your mind at ease. But the information's there, but you have to read it.
Yeah, there you go, Philip. Thank you. Go to the DNR website. You're going to get a lot of information at that site. Don in Iron River has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Don.
Say, what's the status of perch on Madison Lakes?
Status of perch on Madison Lakes? Oh. I don't have... but Pat, do you want to jump in here?
I can nibble around the edges on that a little bit. It hasn't been great in recent years. It's not like when I was a kid. And even when I was a kid back in the 70s and late 60s, perch fishing wasn't what it was back, you know, in my father's generation time. But in recent years, we saw times when the perch really boomed. But there's I think I'm not off too far off the mark here, but, you know, the numbers have not been as great in recent years. And one of the reasons, they think, is these little bottom dwelling, we always call them red worms, that would sustain the perch fishery and really build it up some years and make them real nice, big, fat perch, just hasn't been there in recent years. And part of the problem is probably just from the contamination loads coming in, you know, sediment loads coming into the Madison Lakes and possibly suppressing the perch population. So it could be better. I'm always hoping that the perch will rebound again, because they've done it in the past. But some of the speculation is that, you know, they're fighting an uphill battle right now, getting them back to where they used to be.
Yeah. I can remember years back not having too much trouble limiting out.
Right.
But that has not been the case for me recently. So there you go. We've got some emails I wanted to get to. Mark in, we'll keep a long fish here. Mark in New Glarus emailed us. He's noticed around North America that some fish we consider the best game fish are considered trash fish. For example, in Canada, the locals scoff at us for keeping perch. Why would you bother with that little fish when we can keep a walleye? A brother in Miles City, Montana, on the Yellowstone said walleye were thrown back as they were fish for catfish. They were fishing for catfish. You guys, and he just wonders if you guys have any other examples.
Well, you can see you can get a good argument going, and we've done this, I think, in an article I did for Dean a couple of years ago on if you go across the border, typically you'll find that Minnesotans, they're big into crappies over perch. And Wisconsin, they kind of make fun of us over Minnesota for being so so into perch. And you can have any number of stories of Wisconsinites flooding into Minnesota to go after the perch, like, it was at Lake Winnebagoches was famous for big perch. But if you go out west, it's always fascinating to me as you go out west and talk about walleyes and perch, and there is some good perch fishing out west, you'll pretty much have some of those fisheries to yourself, because the northwestern part of our country, those folks are so into the trout and salmon that they just look down the nose at everything else.
So it is different, yeah, and certainly crappies. And we'll go to Dean for a comment too. Dean?
Well, I almost hate to say this out loud, but I know Pat's been down this road too, but, you know, heck, if I'm coming up short on bluegills, I'll throw a couple of rock bass in there. I just won't tell anybody about it because they'll turn their nose up at rock bass. But, you know, if I fry them up, I can't tell the difference between the rock bass and the bluegill as far as how they taste. Maybe I just have, uncivilized palate. I don't know. But
there you go.
I'll tell you right out here in front of everybody, I'll keep a rock bass.
Well, I will too, and I bet you Tim will too.
Sure.
Mark in Edgerton emailed wondering what's your consensus on the proposed wolf management plan? What thoughts do you have on that? Maybe start with Pat, because I know you've been doing a little writing on that.
Yeah, you know, you probably get a good debate going here between the three of us on the plan. Personally, I favor it. I've pointed out in my columns in recent months that the wolf management plan Wisconsin came up with is very similar to the one they came up with in Minnesota and very similar to the one that came up in Michigan, because it's basically those three Great Lakes states are all managing the same population of wolves. And so to me, it makes sense that we'd kind of be in the same page. And I like to think that the current plan that's been approved is, you know, a little more adaptable than the past. And we can argue about what level of perch that the wolf should be at. But personally, I'm in favor of it. I thought it was a very well done, as best science as we can have right now for the wolf management. So that's where I stand, Larry.
Okay. Tim, what about you?
Well, I thought the plan was good. Basically, they needed to do something. I know we need to do something to try and control the number of wolves, especially around some of the agricultural areas and up north. And I thought that basically what they've done is that they've tried to get away from numbers. And, you know, every time the department comes up with numbers, just like on the deer population, and then there's always controversy over the numbers. And so they've tried to get away from that without, you know, they used to be talking about a 350 level. Now they're talking this should be up 800 to about 1,200 wolves in the state. And I think it's worth trying. I am concerned about hunting wolves with dogs. I'm not a big fan of hunting wolves with dogs myself. But I think it's worth trying. I think that they had the scientists together, and I guess I have to put my faith into what the biologists are doing, and it's worth trying. But I know we need to control the number of wolves up north, and especially around some of the agricultural areas. So I think it's a step forward, and it's going to be interesting to see. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got an email from Weldon. He lives in Buffalo County on a ridge with plenty of deer habitat, but seeing fewer deer now. The drought keeps them closer to the river in the valleys. Unless one manages for wildlife conservation, this may become the norm. What do you think? Managing for wildlife conservation. And I might mention that Dan Small has something on that in his video that we'll be talking about after noon. But Dean, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I can start on that one. You know, you said this person is from Buffalo County?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, if he wants to see fewer, I mean, he's saying he's seeing fewer deer, but he doesn't know what fewer deer looks like unless he lives in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Because our numbers are down. And I don't think it really would have anything to do with the drought. I mean, there's going to be, if you're in Buffalo County, I would think every, you know, bottom of every ridge, there's going to be a creek. And so there could be water. And there's springs all over that country. I can't imagine he's not seeing deer because they've moved to the river for water. I mean, I don't live in Buffalo County. I have friends who live there. But I just can't imagine that's it. For whatever reason, the deer just aren't moving when he's out looking. And I'm sure they're there. I really do. I can't believe they're not there. So right at the moment, something is happening where he's just not seeing deer during daylight hours. But I'm sure they're around. I can't imagine Buffalo County is short of deer.
Yeah, they're
on the edge of the river.
Well, then he also had a second part of it was the popularity of hunting outfitters. Old school hunters continues to get frustrated by that. Do these outfitters issue, do they guarantee success? What kind of fees are they getting? And I honestly don't know anything about the hunting outfitters myself.
Well,
Dean again.
If you want to start down that road, just go to a website. I can't remember the name of the outfitting group, but I know that one of the three principals involved is a former defensive back for the Vikings. I think his name is Trey Wayans. So if you Google Trey's name in Buffalo County, you're going to get their website, and you can learn a whole lot there about how outfitting is shifting in Buffalo County. And you bet a lot of the local folks who have grown up there, have hunted the county for years, aren't exactly tickled pink by that kind of change.
And for those who aren't familiar with it, what does an outfitter do, or what's the process there?
Well, they you know, take hunters out hunting for a fee. And the fees range, Pat, you may be more familiar with fee ranges than I would be, but I'm sure it's going to be anywhere from $3,500 to $10,000 or $12,000, depending upon where you go, what sort of deer you end up shooting, because sometimes it's based on the antler measurement, but in inches, you know, whether they provide housing, whether they provide meals, open bar, whatever, you know. So there's all levels of comfort in these. You know, anywhere from you sleep in your truck in a sleeping bag on your own, and then you hunt this land that they provide for you, to, you know, they're, you know, almost having a soiree every night with a big dinner, 7-course meals. And, you know, in this, that one place that I mentioned, they have their own chef that they've hired to bring in.
Wow. So the price on that is varies considerably, for sure.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah.
Well, we had another question. I think I want to go to Tim for this. The state Senate recently rejected four of Governor Evers' NRB, National Resources Board appointees. How much influence would these appointees have on wildlife policy here in Wisconsin? And what are your thoughts on rejecting four of the proposed folks?
Well, he's exactly right. What happened is that the Senate committee, the people had been appointed by the governor, and the Senate committee basically took off four of these people and rejected them. And I guess to me, it's outright partisan politics. I mean, you know, if they had a problem with one person, the background or whatever, well, that might be a little bit different. But all four of them, it was just partisan politics, and they're trying to get back basically at the governor and the Senate is trying to control the natural resources. And, you know, the Natural Resources Board, the way it has always been set up is that it's a citizen-appointed board, and they set the policy for the Department of Natural Resources, so they do have a lot of power. They set the policies. And so these people come from all different backgrounds, and that's sort of a good thing. We get a mix of people from all over, and they want to get more as far as, you know, more some of the minorities involved who have not been before. So I thought what the governor was doing was good, trying to get good people who are interested in natural resources. But when the Senate committee just took all four of them and basically denied confirmation and then went to the full Senate, and then they voted them down. It was just partisan politics, and we just need to get away from that in Wisconsin. It's really hurting our natural resources.
Yeah. Anything to add there, Dean?
No. You know, Tim's he's on the money there as far as the process on how it happened. I guess what I would add would be I wish we could go back to 1995 and somehow convince Tommy Thompson he shouldn't have removed the appointment of the DNR secretary or hiring of the DNR secretary from the Natural Resources Board. That's how it used to occur. And then at that point in a budget bill move, the DNR secretary hiring now it's an appointment became a cabinet position because the governor now appoints the DNR secretary. And I think had we stayed the way we were with the Natural Resources Board hiring the DNR secretary, we would have had a little more distance between that job in the governor's office, and we wouldn't see some of the games that we're seeing. And maybe I shouldn't say games, because it is, our process does allow it. So the Senate didn't do anything they couldn't legally do, but should they have done it? I mean, you know, that's a discussion. So we're not in the middle of a revolution, so to speak, but I don't think we'd be seeing the kind of stuff we're seeing today if we still had the Natural Resources Board hiring the DNR secretary.
Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer, Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News, Pat Durkin, a freelance writer and editor and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association, our guest today. Questions, comments, experiences to share. I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with our outdoor communicators, Tim Isley, Dean Bortz, and Pat Durkin. Great to have them back. They come by a few times a year to talk about what's going on in wildlife and the outdoors. And it's great to have them back. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Josh in Crawford County, we go to you. Hi, Josh.
Hey, I was just curious to know if anybody else has had a rise in large predator sightings in this area. I know I've seen more bobcats than I have ever before, and I did see a cougar last year bow hunting, so just kind of curious to see who all out there was seeing a rise in those, and if they thought maybe these are things that the DNR had their hands in, or if they were just wild sightings that are more frequent.
Yeah. Josh, thanks a lot. Well, you guys, Pat, are you going to comment there?
Yeah. I hunt quite a bit in Richland County, you know, southwest of Masson, or I guess it'd be a little bit northwest of Masson. And just a couple of years ago, I did see a bobcat down there. But as far as the DNR doing anything special or anything really out of the ordinary to get more bobcats in there, I don't think that's really been something that's been a huge emphasis of their work. But I think as we do good things in our environment and basically protect some of these species from exploitation, you know, bobcats have been rebuilding their population down there. And yeah, you'll see probably some predation and stuff, but typically bobcats as far as the impact on something like deer, it's a pretty short window when bobcats can prey on whitetails. It's typically fawns, but you know, you will see these incredible videos sometimes that people capture of, I saw one last year, I think it was, where a bobcat actually took down a six-point yearling buck. So it can be done, but one thing we never know when you see this kind of videos is what exactly is going on in that deer's life. It might be, and it's very likely to be, that if this was in a CWD area like Richland County is now, that deer might have been sick, you know, and that more vulnerable to a bobcat predation. So all these kind of things are interesting to watch, but I always think to draw real quick conclusions on what's at work there, I like to see things play out and get a broader perspective before I make a real definitive statement on that.
Larry. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, Larry, this is Tim, and I think it's very interesting that this gentleman saw a mountain lion or a cougar there. I think that's really fascinating. I can say that I know that people are seeing more bobcats around Crawford County and in the southern part of the state here. I mean, they've built up a population, and it'll be interesting. Of course, the DNR had that deer and predator study in southwest Wisconsin, and still waiting to get the final results on that one. But I know I've had bobcats that I've seen on trail cameras around there. And one of the interesting times when I was out turkey hunting, I actually saw my first bobcat when there was some movement. I had a turkey decoy about 15 yards out in front of me. I saw some movement in the woods, and I looked, and here's a bobcat, and it's stalking my turkey decoy. And it's 1 foot and another foot and another foot as he came up and stuck out his nose right up to my decoy. And then he must have gotten my scent on the decoy, and he turned 180 degrees, and he ran off in the other direction. So it was a fantastic opportunity to see a bobcat, and that's the only one really I've seen. But I have seen photos of them on trail cameras, and I think he's right. There are more bobcats around, so that's neat.
Yeah, it is indeed. Josh, thank you so much. But it's not anything like the DNR planting them or anything like that. That just is not done, for sure. Pat had mentioned CWD, and I'm sure it'll come into our discussion a bit when I talk to Dan Small in 10 minutes or so. It's confirmed in 43 of our 72 counties, and likely killing more deer in some counties than hunters are shooting, possibly. What are your thoughts on the state's current efforts to combat CWD?
Yes, can you meet Larry?
Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Okay. My thoughts on is that the Wisconsin DNR really hasn't been able to do much on that front as far as, you know, doing anything about the disease since about 2005, 2006, in that time period. You know, these days we're basically just monitoring the disease, encouraging people to get the deer tested. Most hunters are not getting their deer tested. It's only like, I think the survey showed that over the course of the disease's presence in Wisconsin, which now is going on 22, 23 years, we've only had is only like 30% of the hunters have ever bothered to get their deer tested. And on an annual basis, only about 9% are getting their deer tested. So we aren't even doing the monitoring all that good. So like the point I always make is, you know, we assume the disease isn't in a lot of these other parts of Wisconsin, you know, the remaining, 29 counties that haven't found it yet. But I guess I just wouldn't make that assumption when it's all voluntary testing and it's not the systematic testing we had in the early days of the disease's presence.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And in terms of hunters being able to slow the spread of CWD, I guess I don't know if the testing would certainly do it for a health. Potential health reasons, but are there any anything that you can think of that a hunter could do to help slow down that spread?
The only hope we have, and it's a pretty slim hope these days because there really isn't anything force the issue is, you know, for a while there we had Erna buck regulations where a hunter had to shoot an antlerless deer first before shooting a buck. And we used to have targeted removal in these CWD areas where they could focus on areas through shooting programs to try and knock down and remove the sick deer on a more consistent basis. All those things have been, you know, taken away by the legislature. And that's the argument I always make, is that as much as a DNR can frustrate us sometimes, the problem with CWD and its spread in this state, you can't lay it on the DNR. You got to lay it on the legislature. And primarily, you know, they've cut the funding for it. They've removed regulations for it. I've written about this. I've written a long, you could create a pretty long list of things that our legislature has done to thwart any effort to really control CWD and turn it around. So it's a real frustration for those of us who believe in scientific deer management, which has been the crux of our wildlife management programs for, you know, going on 80, 90 years since Elder Leopold's time.
Yeah,
Larry. This is Tim. I'd like to just say I agree with what Pat is saying, and I think what hunters can do is that they need to talk to legislators, because exactly what Pat said, the legislature has put the clamps on, and like Ernebach and baiting and feeding. You know, baiting and feeding is something that draws them to the same place, and I think hunters and the public need to talk to legislators and get them to change and allow the DNR to manage and try and do things to reduce CWD.
Yeah. Talking about baiting and feeding, we got into a discussion last week with Scott Craven. Somebody called and said, well, what's the difference between throwing out a couple of pails of corn, shelled corn, or having a food plot?
Right, and I heard that discussion on with Scott, and the big difference is when you throw out a pile of corn, it's in one place. A food plot is spread over maybe an acre or a half acre. It's just less opportunity for the deer to concentrate in one spot and pass on the disease, I think.
Yeah.
It's also important to point out that a food plot, once it's eaten, doesn't just resprout overnight. Whereas a bait pile, I always call it the eternal food source. If a guy's tending that bait pile, every time it gets eaten away by the deer, he brings it in our pile the next day. And one thing that remains there all the time is the saliva, the feces, the urine, other kind of things that can contaminate food and help spread that disease. So there's many good reasons and many differences between a food plot and a bait pile.
Yeah. And just to wind it up, Tim, the invasive honeysuckle plant keeps its green leaves well into deer season. And if you're a landowner, why should you mark and remove honeysuckle from your property? It's probably a good time to do it during this time of year.
This is a perfect time, Larry, because honeysuckle is still green, and where most of the native species have dropped their leaves, honeysuckle and buckthorn, they've still got green leaves. And so this is a wonderful time to get into the woods, because a lot of those things that are green are those honeysuckles and the invasives. And number two, if you do treat them with a glyphosate or some sort of an herbicide, that's going to go down to the roots. And right now they're taking all of the nutrients down to the roots. So that's a really good time. You know, one time I had interviewed the Wisconsin tree farm winners, Rachel Jordan, and she said, you know, I manage from my tree stand. And when you're in the tree stand, when you're deer hunting, look in the woods. You can look at your woods and you can look at those invasives and know where you should be spending your time.
makes good sense. Well, on that note, we are about out of time. Guys, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. And I hope you'll be back and we can do this all over again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Dean Bortz, editor of Wisconsin Outdoor News. One of our guests, Pat Durkin, freelance writer and editor, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. And Tim Isley, freelance outdoor writer and private landowner in Crawford County and currently hunting ducks on the Mississippi River. Well, now he can get back to his hunting. Oh, my goodness. Coming up, though, we are going to hear from Dan Small. I had a chance to view his latest video on Deer Hunt, Wisconsin. Sort of got me thinking a bit about hunting in Bayfield County, although it'll probably be a lot of looking at the scenery, I'm pretty sure. But he'll talk about the Bayfield County area and all the other areas as well. And he's coming up next. Dan Small with Deer Hunt, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, the deer hunting season is underway in the state, but the traditional gun deer hunt begins on November 18th of this year. And Dan Small is back with us. He's the host and producer of the TV show Outdoor Wisconsin and Outdoor Radio with Dan Small. He's also a contributing editor with Wisconsin Outdoor News. Dan's annual Deer Hunt Wisconsin show is out this week, and we'll talk with him about the show, about deer forecast. There's a piece on elk in Wisconsin within the video, and we'll talk about a few ways you can make your land more attractive to deer as well. So, are you ready for the gun deer season? Tell us your stories, maybe from last year. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dan Small, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Larry, it's great to be back. Thank you. I always look forward to this time when we can talk about deer and the deer show, which is coming up tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow night already. I had a chance to, you know, I got a preview copy of the video, and it got me worked up.
Good. We hope that will be the case for most viewers.
Oh, man. What the forecast for the districts, I'm not too hopeful. I'm in Bayfield County, but the forecast for each district is something you include in the show.
It is, and I also hunt in Bayfield County, Larry, and I'm not sure exactly where you hunt. I'm not going to put a pin on the map on my spot either, but we hunt private land just south of the city of Washburn, so we are very close to town, and we see a lot of deer. We did not shoot many last year. I think we shot three in the rifles in the nine-day season and the antlerless season combined. My son Bo hunts it, and he hasn't had much opportunity to do that this year, but we do see deer, and these are what we call town deer. They kind of go into the parks in the wintertime, but you know, the rest of the year they're out and available, and we occasionally see a wolf. We occasionally see coyotes, bobcats on the trail cameras as well, but out in the public land, out in the Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest, the Barrens, over toward Iron River, there are fewer deer than there used to be. So I guess it depends on where you are. My radio partner, Jeff Kelm, actually hunts in Douglas County, about an hour west of where we hunt, and they see lots of deer in the farmland that is bordering the steep gullies that go down to feed the Amnicon and those other rivers that go into Lake Superior. So I think if you're on farmland or if you're in a place that's not too far from towns, you're likely to see more deer.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're in the middle of the Shawamigan National Forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
where we are. Well, tell us, give us a thumbnail of the video of the show this year.
Well, okay. Now there are two versions, and you saw the full, what we call the director's cut, the full 45 minute of content version. We are going to have forecasts, as you mentioned, for each of the four regions, north, northeast, southwest, or west central and south. And I get those directly from the DNR's deer forecast PDF that anyone can access. It's on the DNR website if you just type in deer forecast. And that, so that's one part of the show. The hunting regulations, of course, is something we always cover. We talk about new rules, and there aren't that many, and season dates, which most people are aware of. And then we have usually a habitat segment or two, and this time we have Mike Murphy of Whitetail Sanctuary Solutions, who spent a couple days with us up in Bayfield County on our land, on my son's land, because it's in his name now, but on our land 2 years ago, and we still have some stuff that we haven't used on the show. So he's talking with my son about food plots and stand placement and water holes and that kind of thing. And then we have an actual food plot segment with a landowner in Chippewa County who shows how he plants a food plot and talks about how he's seen an increase in wildlife, not just deer, but bears, turkeys, and other wildlife as well. And we have two mentoring segments that are, I think, the real heart of this year's show.
Yeah.
I don't know what you thought of those, but yeah. We've got two experienced hunters mentoring two young men with Down syndrome, and another one where one of those two mentors takes out a young man who has a terminal cancer, and in each case, they all got deer. I won't tell you how this story ends there, but, you know, that's... Those are real, to me, they're tearjerkers, and I've watched them a dozen times, and I still, you know, I get choked up when I watch them. Yeah. We visit the Midwest Outdoor Heritage Education Expo, which Mark LaBarbera, my partner in the deer show, puts on every year. We look at that. We look at elk this year because deer hunters like, some of them are going out west to hunt elk. And some of them are lucky enough to draw a tag here in Wisconsin. So we spend a day with biologists and actually go out and capture two young newborn elk. I mean, they were just 2 or 3 days old when we saw them. And we talk about why they're doing that and the research that goes into that. And then we talk briefly about CWD, but the DNR is... not extending. They've actually got a new research project that came out of that CWD study that Tim was referring to in the last segment in the Southwest. They found some deer with pneumonia. So they asked a bunch of hunters to take tissue samples. And I did that with two deer, that our videographer shot in Crawford County. And so that's pretty much a quick snapshot of what the show covers this year.
Yeah, I get a lot of really good. I much enjoyed the new feature on elk and also the sampling. It was, well, the whole thing was interesting, but there's also a lot of video and a lot of still pictures of deer, which.
Yes.
The lot.
That's something I didn't mention. New this year, what we did last year is we said, hey, if you've got photos or videos, because we know everybody's out there with a camera and they have trail cameras, send them to us. And so we got a ton of response, and we took a lot of those, mostly stills, because they just seem to work better in the format. And we've got, I don't know, a minute and a half broken up three times, three different places in the long version of the show where you might see yourself with a deer. So we hope we'll do that again in next year's show if we get a lot of response from this year.
And how many years have you been doing the show? It's a long time now.
This is the 33rd annual. Yeah. we started in 91, and it was a live show produced by Milwaukee PBS. and it was I don't know what's the term I'm looking for. It was simulcast, Milwaukee and Madison, simulcast, and we had live call-ins. We had wardens and biologists and other people from DNR in what in the phone banks that are usually used for pledge drives, you know, for member drives. And we finally took all the phones off the hook an hour after the show ended. That was the highest rated show that Milwaukee PBS ran in the whole month of November 1991. That's unbelievable. But back then there was no internet to speak of. That, you know, people had to contact us to get information on new rules, and there were some new rules that we covered. And I think that was the main impetus for that great viewership that year.
Rick in Portage County has something. Let's go there. Rick, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning. I'm curious. I read an article the other day about a lobbying group that is pushing for hunting deer with air guns, and I really don't know anything about that other than, you know, the pellet guns. And I'm wondering if you could, if what's your thoughts, and if you could edify me a little bit about that.
You bet. There is a bill that's in the state Senate now. I believe it is SB, oh boy, I want to, it's either 526 or 536. I just had it on my computer a couple minutes ago. They're talking about, well, the law, the bill would simply make it legal to use an air gun any time a firearm season is open for any game in Wisconsin. Now, currently, you can use an air gun to hunt small game and waterfowl, but you can't hunt big game with it. And what they would allow the DNR to craft the rules that would say, well, you got to have a gun of this caliber or this foot-pounds of energy or whatever. But that would not be in the law itself. It would simply allow air guns. Now, I happen to have a loaner from a manufacturer that makes large bore air guns. It's a 35 caliber, and it will kill a deer at 50 to 100 yards, no question. And they use them in 29 states, I believe, that are for big game now. So you can hunt any big game in those states with certain regulations. You know, there may be some variations of that. But the bill would simply bring Wisconsin into that group of states that allow air guns for any type of hunting. Now, we're not talking about, this is not your dad's pellet gun that he might plink at squirrels on the bird feeder with. You know, this is a big bore air gun that is capable of killing a deer cleanly and humanely within the reasonable range. They don't have the range of centerfire rifles. They don't have the foot pounds. The bullet travels at subsonic speed, so it's 800 or 900 feet per second. But it's got enough energy to kill a deer. And, you know, we have an ad in the commercial version of the show, which I believe Larry saw.
Yeah, yes, I did.
I'm actually shooting that into a gel block at 30 yards, I think it was. And the penetration is and a block of ballistic gelatin, which simulates flesh. The penetration is enough to certainly kill a deer.
And the advantage of why is there the interest in it? They're not as noisy.
Good question, Larry. They're quieter. There's virtually no recoil. It's like shooting a .22 rifle, but quieter. And they are a little cumbersome to carry, so that's a disadvantage. But once you charge that cylinder, you've got, you know, a dozen or more shots, and that's more than any deer hunter should need. And it works like a bolt action. You've got to, you know, cock it between shots. But the thought is it's like a crossbow in that it makes hunting big game with a rifle accessible to youngsters who can't handle a big bore rifle, women who can't handle it, people who have issues with noise, and it would allow hunting nearer to habitation, you know, to towns or houses. And again, you'd have to follow the law. You can't just go into somebody's backyard and shoot a deer with this quiet rifle. You know, the law says you got to be so many yards from a road or from a house, and, you know, that would apply here.
Yeah. Rick, there you go. Thanks so much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Property, there's a lot of hunting done on private lands here in the state.
Yes.
And
yes.
You might talk a minute about that and getting permissions and so forth.
Yeah, so I misspoke on the bill. It's 586. So
586.
If anyone wants to look it up. Yeah, you go SB 586 is the Senate bill. There will be a companion bill in the House. I don't think it's out yet, but it might come to a hearing very soon. Yes, private land. You must have permission to be on private land. It doesn't have to be posted to make it private. And if you are looking for a place to hunt and you don't think there's enough public land, or you don't know where to hunt on public land, and there's a ton of it here in Wisconsin, you know, the best thing you can do, and you probably should have done it months ago, is get to know landowners in the county where you want to hunt. And, you know, talk to them, ask them if someone else is hunting. And typically it's difficult to get permission to hunt deer on private land. I have personally found it easier to get permission to hunt small game or turkeys. But most people who have private land that has deer on it, they hunt it themselves or their family hunts it. But you must ask permission, and you know, you must respect the trespass laws. And if you shoot a deer on land where you have permission and it goes on to somebody's private property, you really legally have to ask that person, can I go retrieve that deer? That happened to me just earlier, well, a couple of weeks ago now. One of my neighbors shot a buck and called me, and he said, hey, it's heading your way. And I said, well, let's see if we can find it. Ended up, we did not find that deer. He brought in a woman with a bloodhound, trained deer trailing dog on a leash, which is legal, and the dog followed the trail and indicated by its behavior that that deer's still going. So it was not a lethal hit, but he did the right thing. He let me know, and I let another neighbor know that deer might be on your property. So that's why we're out there. But that's the way to do it. I guess that's a long-winded answer to the simple comment of just ask permission.
So there are, I think, two or three new rules that you do talk about, and you kind of go over in general what you need to take out there in the way of license and so forth.
Yes, indeed. The new rules this year, let me find that. There aren't too many. One is the baiting and feeding, which changes every year because new CWD positives are found. In fact, Polk County had its first positive, and now there are only 13 counties in the state where you can legally bait and feed deer. So that's one thing. And you have to check the regs, because if they find bow-kill deer, and that was the case with this one in Polk County and also one in Trempealeau, if they find one in that county that's where baiting is still allowed, that may change overnight. So there's that. The antlerless only hunt, the number of counties where that's allowed changes every year. There are 39 counties this year. The archery and crossbow seasons are extended through the end of January in 31 counties. And most importantly, Iron County is the only deer management unit for this season where you can only shoot bucks. So those are the new rules.
And the video, I hope a lot of people get to see this, And I think your first viewing is tomorrow, isn't it?
It is tomorrow, and in fact, the full schedule is on my Deer Hunt Wisconsin Facebook page, and PBS Wisconsin is going to be the first channel, the first station to air it, and that'll be tomorrow night at 8:30 on the Wisconsin channel, followed by Milwaukee PBS that's going to air it at 9 on the main channel, WMVS, and Bally Sports North and Bally Sports Wisconsin both air the show at 9 o'clock. And then there are repeats on all those stations that I won't go into, but, you know, after tomorrow night, there are repeats on Friday, Saturday, and even as far as Tuesday, I think, on Milwaukee PBS. And then the Wisconsin Community Media group of stations, and there are more than 30 stations in the state that will air a version of the show, the version you saw, Larry, without the commercials. So lots of opportunities to watch it. And my Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV YouTube channel will have the whole show tomorrow night, actually a little earlier than the stations are going to air it. We'll have it live there at 6 o'clock, in case people can't watch it later. And if you don't mind watching it on your phone or a small screen, it'll be available on the Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV YouTube channel at 6.
So Dan, you're probably already thinking about next year's video.
We are already doing that. In fact, I shot some footage just this week. A young fellow who lives with us and works on our farm, John Oswald, we call him Ozzy, he shot his first doe, his first deer with a bow. He actually got a buck a couple of years ago, but he shot a doe the other morning, and we got video of him. He actually had a GoPro going at the time, and we got the deer stopping and him shooting, and we shot some other video to go with that, and we took it in for CWD testing, and we actually donated that deer to the food pantry system, the deer donation program, which is something that hunters can do to help other people enjoy venison, and also in response to something you talked about with your previous guest, control CWD. If you shoot an extra deer intentionally or, by accident, illegal deer, register it, get it tested for CWD, donate it. And if it does not have CWD, it will go into the food pantry program, and you'll also help control the deer herd.
Dan, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Dan Small, take a look at his movie, Deer Hunt Wisconsin. It's going to be on starting tomorrow night. And thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Frank Armstrong will be along to talk personal finance with you tomorrow at this time. I'm Larry Mueller.